yes. There we go. Can see the numbers. So we're going. All right, this is Beth Smith, and I'm up at 146 Adams to interview Jane Moline. Hello, Jane. You ready to go?
Right.
All right. First, tell us about your family, where you came from.
You mean where I was born and
yeah,
so
sure.
forth? Well, oddly enough, I was born in Leadville, and everybody thinks that I'm a native of Leadville, but that happened to be because my grandmother lived there. So I was born there, and then immediately my family left. They took me and took off, so I know nothing about Leadville, very little about it.
Where'd you go?
What?
Where did you go from Leadville? What?
Oh, well, my father was a railroad engineer at the time here in Salida, so he moved down here to Salida for a while, and not too long.
Good. Can you tell me what your birth date was?
April 16th, 1914.
There you go.
In other words, think of the number of wars I've outlived.
You're still following on TV, aren't you? Well, did you have brothers and sisters?
I have one sister who lives in upstate New York, in Wilmington, New York.
And what's her name?
Harriet Adams.
And her birthday?
Harriet's birthday? April the 28th. Well, she's 12 years younger than me. You figure out what day it'll be.
Okay. We'll do that. So you moved to Salida then when you were very young.
Yes, I lived in Salida. I didn't spend too much of my childhood here. Mm-hmm. But do you want the rest of my family?
Oh, yes, I do. Tell us about it.
Well, my father was born in Omaha, Nebraska. And my mother, oddly enough, and this is interesting, was born in Breckenridge. Well, she was born in 1889, my father in 1888. But when her father had come to Breckenridge from Georgia after the Civil War, and he ran an ore team in the between the mines up there. Well, I don't know whether it was a result. When I was a young person, I didn't question my parents enough as much as I should have. But whether it was during the Louisiana Purchase or when Spain and the United States divided their property, you know, and made the Arkansas River the boundary between Spain and, well, there's a little section up near Breckenridge, up the Blue, that was never incorporated in that plan or in that schedule. And my mother was born up there, and she always claimed she wasn't really a citizen of the United States. And I read recently in the paper that they just discovered that, and they were trying to do something about that little chunk of ground up there, but that's where she was born. And this, what else?
Well, we got you into Salida. Did you attend any Salida schools?
Well, I didn't. As I said, I didn't spend. You terrified me, yes. I didn't spend much of my childhood in Salida because I lived mostly in California or Phoenix, Arizona. But during the period we did live here, I remember the town as being centered around the railroad, with its shops and the railroad traffic, which was very busy at the time. I do remember the noon whistle from the shops. And when the whistle blew, everybody in town knew it was noon, and they set their time to the shop whistle. And I can't remember if it blew at night or not. It seems to me it did blow at 5 o'clock, but I'm not sure. But I remember the noon whistle. And I can't remember all of the passenger trains that went through here, except there were the ones I'm sure I've got the numbers, 3 and 4, 7 and 8, and 13 and 14. That would be 6 passenger trains. Well, the odd number went one direction, and the even number would go the other direction. I think 1 went east, or 2 went east, and 1 went west, but I'm not sure.
This was the Durango and Rio Grande?
What?
Was it the Durango and Rio Grande or Denver and Rio Grande?
Yeah, the Denver and Rio Grande.
Good, yeah.
And These were all standard gauge trains, and then there was the pea shooter over Marshall Pass that was a narrow gauge. And although it was a narrow gauge, this train had a club car and a porter and the whole bit, and lots of tourists. And I used to go over to college on it. I went to Western State when I first went to college. And the tourists would get on when the train would go around an S-curve where the engine would, on Marshall, the engine would be almost opposite the passenger cars. Oh, the tourists would just go frantic with, oh, look, you know. Well, anyway, when I was young, if we wanted to go to Denver instead of like today when we hop in our car and it'd take 2.5 or 3 hours to get to Denver, my dad would arrange to take the train, and a Pullman car would be pulled up and down here by the depot, and it had a porter and all the rest of it. But we'd go down about bedtime, we'd get on the Pullman and go to sleep, and then during the night, the eastbound train would pick up that car and take it to Denver, and in the morning we'd wake up and we'd be in Denver.
Pretty neat.
And I don't know if anybody else in the whole town would remember that, because I was just a little kid at the time. July of 1922, speaking about the railroad, the shop's machinists went on strike, and it was a very prolonged and bitter strike. In one incident, when the strikers were having a social, quote-quote, down in the Oddfellows Hall, a ranger in plain clothes came in and immediately caused a riot. They almost beat him to death, and the strikers and Sheriff Hutchison, Wendell Hutchison's forebear, was the sheriff at the time. Hutchison came in and he settled everything down, but he declared that no more rangers from the state would come in. They interfered with his keeping the peace. And there was a lot of hard feelings during this strike between the strikers and the scabs and the townspeople, too, as a matter of fact. And finally, a year later, almost a year later, the strike was settled, but the hard feelings never were settled for a good many years anyway. Well, my father was a railroad engineer, and he decided to try commercial art, so we moved to California, and then we went to Phoenix, where we were until the Depression got severe, and we came back to Salida. He still had his seniority on the railroad. And so I started to school here. That was when I was in the eighth grade, I guess. And after I graduated from high school, I had to wait a year before going to college.
When did you graduate?
What?
When did you graduate?
32, for crying out loud. The Depression was still in effect by that time. So I had to wait a year, even though I did have a scholarship. And incidentally, the tuition at CU for each quarter was only $45. It's hard to believe, isn't
wow.
it?
Yeah.
And that year I spent time as the society editor for the Salida Mail. And that gave me a taste for journalism. Which I followed through while I was in college. And there I met my future husband, who with three other Connecticut Yankees had come out west, not in a covered wagon, but in a Model T, which was almost as bad, I guess. And I remember his saying that they were really awed by Monarch Pass, but they were scared too because their brakes weren't very good. And so they tied logs on the back of their wheels. They thought it'd slow them down going down the hill.
Now, this was Charles Moline. Hmm? This was Charles Moline.
Yes, Charles Moline. Oh, yes, I've only had one husband, that is.
Just want his name on the tape.
Well, we married the year I graduated, which was still a depression. and teaching jobs were scarce. They were almost impossible to get. And my new husband, Charles Moline's first job was in Sargent's over the hill over here. But unlike what we remembered, it was a very busy place because they were building Monarch Pass at that time, or constructing Monarch Pass, and the town was just running over with people. And they had seven grades in the, or eight grades in the school, first through eighth grade, and the high school kids went to Gunnison on the bus, and he was the principal and teacher too. Over the one of the teachers, there were several teachers. And what a way to start out a life of education, I guess, because his salary was $100 a month, $100 a month for 9 months. And when I go to the grocery store, that's about what seems like that's what it is. But anyway, I'll have to admit we didn't have to live on that salary, because in the summer times he was assistant manager at Rocky Neck State Park in Connecticut. So, I think he got paid as much at summer's work there as he did over at Sargent's. And speaking about Sargent's, after we left, they had a big fire over there, and I think their big old Trinchera Lumber Company burned down, if I remember. And then they took a lot of those cabins and houses, even the boarding house, down to Buckskin Joe down here. So a lot of those places down at Buckskin Joe came from this Sargent's that was there when we taught over there, when Chick taught over there.
Now, Buckskin Joe's down by the Royal Gorge.
Yes, that Buckskin Joe. I don't know. Our time over there was certainly different, but it was lots of fun living. You know, when you're young, everything is lots of fun. We could get up at top of a hill and ski right down to our front door, you know, and all just lots of fun things. But from Sargent's, we went over to Sawatch, where Chick taught a couple years or so, and then we went to California. And after the war, we came back to Salida, since Chick would be teaching here in the high school. But he taught history and journalism, and he was a high school counselor to begin with. One interesting point in his journalism stint was when Harry Truman's train came through Salida. You've heard about this. When his train came through Salida, he assigned one of the girls to interview Harry Truman. And I tried all morning to think of that girl's name, and I cannot think, and I apologize to her if she ever hears this, because she was really a go-getter, I'm telling you. Well, everybody in town went down to see the president, and the down by the depot was just crowded with people. Well, when the train pulled out, this girl was missing. And she had slipped into the President Truman's car, unbeknown to the president or anybody else. She rode all the way to the next stop with the President Truman, and she got a wonderful interview with the president. And I cannot remember that girl's name, and I can see her as well as can be, but you never saw such a girl. Well, I never planned to be a teacher. I was not going to be a teacher, but I did have the basics of, I think, psychology and Colorado school law, and that was about it. Other than, I spent my time learning the subjects I wanted to do. Well, journalism and archaeology, you see, far from teaching. But anyway, they had more students than they planned on, so the superintendent and the principal came up here and begged me to come and take a class on. So I finally said I'd try it for 1 year. I taught several English classes up there, and I stayed for 20 years. Among the extracurriculars I handled, I started National Honor Society, and of that I'm proud, because the kids needed it, and I had some wonderful students that I keep seeing in the paper. It's continued today, but when I first went up there, they didn't have National Honor Society. And then I was a senior sponsor for the last years of my teaching up there. And the year I retired, I had 137 seniors. Now they average around 80-something every year. And I had 137 seniors. Well, my recollections of the years are good, but I don't know.
When did you retire?
What?
When did you retire?
1978. And now I hate to compare today with the years that I taught. My husband retired as superintendent, and his experiences were many. I'm telling you, he had some wonderful experiences.
What years did he retire?
78. We retired together. For instance, when he was a track coach, they won the state championship, and I remember Johnny Bayouk being interviewed by the Denver Post. But then I'm not talking about Chick at the moment. Looking back at education, the only thing I can say, we didn't have the feeling that Big Brother was breathing down our neck all the time, as I'm afraid maybe is happening today, because with all these government regulations and government intervention and paperwork and things like that, CSAP and things like that, we were able to focus on our subject matter instead. But I'm sure the teachers do a wonderful job, better maybe than we did, but I think it might have been easier teaching when I taught. Shortly after we retired, the Presbyterian Church had its centennial celebration. That was in 1980. And being retired, you know, they think you have lots of time. I was named chairman of the centennial committee. Well, luckily, Elder Bergner volunteered to help me, and so that we went at it. But our church, as I said, the Presbyterian Church, was founded in 1880 and was the first church in Salida. And to begin with, the meetings were held in an old building that they hauled up here from Cleora, and the people had to sit around in timbers on the floor. But by November, now that was in July, I think, and by November they were starting a construction of a new building. The bid was $260.
And where was the new building going to be?
Oh, downtown in this, about where the other old church was. Uh-huh. At the time, I had pictures of them, but I gave them to the church, put it in the scrapbook. Yeah. But it looked like this little white frame church was sticking way out in the boondocks. But actually, it was down in that property where our other church was, you know, down on F and 3rd Street. And it was given to us by Governor Hunt. I think he had some business dealings in Salida at the time, and so he gave that property to the church. And they built, as I said, this little white church down there. And I don't know if you remember Grace Baird and Ruth Parker, but many people in Salida would know them. They were baptized in that church, and then a new brick church was completed in 1901. That's the one that was down on the corner of F and 3rd Street, and it was completed at the cost of $7,000. Well, you can't imagine that today, but with the furnishings, it cost $8,044.70. This property was sold to the Standard Oil Company, and then our present church was built. And I heard some criticism about selling it. Well, today, I don't think we could have sold it. It was in the historic district, and having been built in 1901, you know. But it had no kitchen facility, no restrooms or anything of that nature. People weren't supposed to do things like that in a church. And it had a big belfry with the bell, which, and I can't remember when it came, I think in 1883 or something. I can't remember exactly the date, but that big bell was the old first bell to be heard in Chaffee County, and but the in the belfry for the bell had bats in it. And if you didn't watch during the church service, the bats would fly down into the church. Well, finally, so it was a good thing. We had to have our church meetings and many of the Sunday school classes in a little old building where the driver's license is today. And we had some experiences over there. We had to go and get the water across the street if we had a dinner for the, you know, a potluck or something. No running water in there, and an old coal stove, and it was. But anyway, we had lots of fun, lots of chili suppers and things in there. By 1903, why the congregational meeting had to be held. Now, this was in the brick church to raise money for the pastor's salary. It was already $100 in arrears, and there had been an overdraft on the treasury for about $81. And the people responded. Three people pledged $10. Three other people pledged $2.50. Others were willing to give 50 cents a week as long as they were earning a living, and then five people gave 25 cents a week. But anyway, it seemed to get them out of the hole. And one interesting thing I remember from the old minutes, about this time repairs had to be made on the manse, and it cost 85 cents, as it was recorded in the minutes. Now, how different it is from today, I tell you. Well, after we retired, we did quite a bit of traveling. We went to the Caribbean and Jamaica and Puerto Rico, the Dominican Republic, South America. We went to Venezuela and Tenerife and the Canary Islands and Ivory Coast in Africa. Of course, they call it the Côte d'Ivoire. And we went to Germany and Ireland and Denmark and Yugoslavia. And that was one of the high points of our traveling, I think, because though we stayed in Croatia and went to Serbia and Montenegro, it was that time it was had all these different states under the name of Yugoslavia. But we spent a lot of time in Dubrovnik, and what memories I have of that. How glad I am to be back here in Salida, living in Salida, when I hear of all those upheavals that in many of those places, like in the Ivory Coast, Abidjan. We were staying in Abidjan, which is the capital, I guess, and they've been having riots and killing and dreadful there. And when we got to see it, it was not that way. It was a very prosperous country for Africa. But anyway, I'm just glad to be living here in peaceful Salida. I think it's peaceful. And that's it.
That's all.
Any questions?
Yeah, yes. I didn't get your maiden name.
Oh, it's Hollander.
Hollander spelling.
No, my maiden name was Ingledew. My mother's name is Hollander.
Can you spell your maiden name for me?
Ingledew.
B-E-W.
D-E-W, yeah, what, Ingledew.
Uh-huh. What nationality is that?
English.
English, okay, yeah, all right. Now, your children, you didn't even mention your family.
Well, I'm very proud of both of my children. My son, as I said, lives in... you mean my own children?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Lives in Aurora and works in Denver, and my daughter teaches in Connecticut, which is, of course, with the exception of Chuck, all of our relatives are in the East, in the Far East. I mean, on the East Coast.
Right. And do you have any grandchildren?
No. No grandchildren.
No grandchildren. That's
no
unusual.
I have two grandchildren, but no great-grandchildren.
Yeah, well, neither. Tell us about your grandchildren.
My granddaughter, Jennifer, teaches in a private girls' school in Texas. and my grandson Jonathan is in college. They're Sue's children, my daughter's children.
Yeah, good. Now, you mentioned some kind of a Connecticut State Park where you would spend your summers. I didn't get the name of it.
Rocky Neck State Park.
Rocky Neck. All right, fine.
Beautiful state park it is. And when they built the pavilion, it's up on a kind of a hill, and it's a large pavilion, but it was, I guess, prior to the World War II or something, and they swore it was a fortress, a government fortress, instead of being a park pavilion. And, you know, the Germans and people, oh, they're building that fort up there, which it wasn't. It was just a pavilion. It's a beautiful state park.
Right. We have beautiful state parks around here, too.
But not like that.
Not like that one.
Well, no, because it doesn't cover the state parks here don't cover the territory that they do there. This was a large state park. Great camping grounds and so forth, as well as the beach and so forth.
Did you work there, too?
No. I didn't work until I started to teach school. I lived off my husband.
Ah, all right. Now, can you see any changes in Salida from when you were teaching here to now?
Maybe it'd be better I didn't say, because I think a lot of people who are newcomers, I've heard what they say about us old-timers. When I was younger, of course, it was a working town with a railroad and Climax, and downtown had lots of stores where you could buy things, you know, besides art galleries and things. We had two or three drug stores and several grocery stores and a number of meat markets, and instead of being like Safeways where you could go and buy everything at once, you know, to be a grocery store and then a meat market. I remember down where Gamble's, there was a big grocery store, Alexander's Grocery Store. Across the alley was Callaway's, I think that was the name, meat market. So it was that way. And now I think we have a little bit of a different attitude in the town. I don't know that it's any worse or any better. It's just different. And of course, there are a lot more houses here in Salida. Building, I mean. We didn't, when they put in Holman Avenue down here, it was just to be a little alley-like thing for a few of the people up here on the mesa that complained how long it took to get down the road. And now it's the busiest highway in town.
You're right.
And I'm speaking from experience, since I go down there a lot. But all the new building and one thing and another, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And no trains now.
I can't think of anything else. Do you have it, unless you have a question or two.
Well, I think you've done just real well. I really appreciate you sitting down and talking with me. I think you've done a fine job.